Tell me, welcome our speaker tonight, and it is Taylor from the Well Group in Wisconsin.
Hey guys, I'm an alcoholic. My name's Taylor. First of all, I just want to thank Mike for asking me to speak. It's a privilege and an honor. Anytime I get to stand behind a podium in a room full of Alcoholics Anonymous. A little bit about me. Sobriety date is actually my anniversary is going to be Wednesday. It's 11/1 of 2009. I mean, I'll have 8 years. I'm 24 years old. I got sober when I was 16. And I moved here from Wisconsin last Saturday. Not this past Saturday, but the Saturday before. So I've been here for like a week and a couple days. I guess I'll just sort of start a little bit at the beginning. So I grew up in Wisconsin my whole life. If you're familiar at all, like it's near Milwaukee, which if you're not familiar, it's near Chicago. that's what we'd always say. You go on vacation, we go on like a cruise or something like that, and people are like, where are you from? And they're from like Europe or something. You'd be like, Milwaukee. They'd be like, where? Chicago. It's the same thing. So I grew up, and so my parents met in Alcoholics Anonymous. My dad currently has 50 years. No, a little less than that, 45, something like that. And my mom is 42. So they've been around a long time, and they met in Alcoholics Anonymous, had a couple years prior to each, and ended up getting married and having some kids. I have one half brother who's a couple years older than me, and then I have two twin brothers, and they're 2 years younger than me. So grew up house of four boys, two parents who were active, good members of Alcoholics Anonymous. So it was really interesting growing up in that environment. It's a lot, at least from sort of what I often hear, it's a lot different of an environment to grow up in than sometimes what I might hear someone talk about. So I was always at least a little bit familiar or had an idea that there was this disease. I definitely didn't have a full understanding of it. The extent of my knowledge when I was like growing up was, you know, my parents don't drink, my friend's parents do drink. My parents go to meetings a couple times a week, and they used to drink apparently before I knew them, and it didn't go too well for them. So that's like honestly about all I knew about it growing up. I grew up going to private Catholic school for elementary and middle school, and then in high school I switched over to public school. So as I said before, I got sober at 16. I took my first drink at either 13 or 14, so I did not drink for too long. Occasionally, you sort of, to be completely honest, like, I don't think anyone's ever actually truly come up to my face and said this, but sometimes you'll hear those cliches of like some old timer saying, oh, I spilled more than you drank, or, you know, something like that. And, one of my good friends, she always just says, don't spill. Why would you spill? what are you doing? So I always like that comeback. And I always like, sometimes it's like, oh, you know, I went downhill pretty quickly. I didn't come in here looking great. So first drink, I'm in a metal band. A little bit different image than I have today, but it's like, I think it's eighth grade going into freshman year of high school. It's like that summer, something like that. And we're playing Battle of the Bands at the local high school. And all my band members, like, they're good kids. I grew up like this good kid. Like, I got straight A's. Like, I followed the rules. Like, I felt guilty when I did, like, the slightest thing wrong. Like, I grew up like this great kid, like, up until the point where, like, I decided I wanted to put booze in my body. So it's Battle of the Bands, and my younger brother's babysitter has a fake ID. So, like, even she's not old enough to get booze yet, but, like, I'm getting it from her. And so I've convinced her to buy us two bottles. One was Captain Morgan coconut rum, Parrot Bay coconut rum, and then just vodka. And that was me from the start, right? Like, I had no interest in, like, drinking a beer. Like, I knew exactly, like, I never had a drink drug in my system, but, like, I knew the response I was looking for, right? Like, I understood that, like, those were the types of alcohols, like, I was trying to acquire. And I had yet to have any, right? I'd yet to have a drop in my system. I remember, cutting back a little bit, I remember being, I don't know, must have been like 8 years old, and I'm laying in bed, And I hear my parents come home from their Thursday night meeting. Later, that would become one, you know, a home group of mine that I would go to every week. But they're coming home from their home group. It's called the Badger Group, Wisconsin Badgers. So it's the Badger Group. It's the biggest meeting in the state. It's like 350 people every Thursday night. And they're coming home from that. And I'm laying in bed. And I hear them. I hear the garage door open. And I'm thinking about it. And I was one of those people, some of you may be able to relate, where I could just lay in bed. My head could spin for hours. Like, I could just be thinking about just the deepest stuff. And I remember thinking to myself, 8 years old, never had a single substance in my body, a relatively well-mannered child, getting good grades in school, like, don't really have any major issues in my life, like, live with parents who make good money, like, I have no problems. And the thought occurred to me, like, man, I sure hope when I decide that I want to drink, I hope I don't end up like them. And, like, I've never seen them drunk in my life. Right? Like, they are great. I grew up in, like, a great family. Like, I already know, like, I'm not interested in spending my life in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Right? And, like, I don't even know, like if I ever have any doubt of, like, oh, like, maybe I'm not really an alcoholic. Like, maybe I don't belong here. Like, 8 years old, never had anything in my system. Like, I'm already, like, I don't want AA. Like, that's not for me. Right? So, anyways, very first time I get drunk, none of my band members are interested in doing this with me. I'm already seeking out lower companions. I'm already going around. Who's interested? Who would like to come out with me? I don't even care who you are. And I get a group of friends together, and it's a terrible plan. I guess I just hadn't yet to understand really what the effects of alcohol were, but it was like, we were at my parents' house. I'm like, hey, we're going to go down to the park for like an hour, and then we're going to come back. And like in that hour, we finished two bottles. I black out the first time, so I'm drinking, and probably roughly 30 minutes in, like, I have very little memory. I remember walking down to the park, neighborhood park. It's just sort of small town America, whatever. We're just doing our own thing. I sort of remember walking back just the littlest bit, sort of in and out, gray out, and then next thing I know, like, it's morning. And I wake up and I have no idea what happened. I seem to be in my bed at home. I seem to not have my friends with me anymore. And I seem to be covered in vomit. And all those things were true. And I walk upstairs. My bedroom was in the basement. I had like built like my own little lair down there. So we had put up just a little drywall and cornered off a corner of the basement. And that's where I spent most of my time. And, I walk upstairs and I head to the bathroom, and the bathroom door is closed. And there's a sign on it that says, Taylor, please clean this. And I open it up, and there's projectile puke all over the bathroom. So I think my mom was going to Al-Anon, which was good, because, you know, she's not taking care of it. She's making me clean it up. But so that was my first experience with it, and it turned out that in my blackout, I had ratted out who had gotten me the alcohol, and so my friends were sort of mad at me that I was ratting people out, and I had made a complete fool of myself, and I was on, you know, with my pants around my ankles in front of my parents, just completely plastered out of my mind, and was completely caught. And that seemed to be like the progression of my life. Like, I seemed like, as I continued to drink and use, like, it seemed that all my friends, like, were getting away with it and, like, weren't having any issues. And, like, to them, it was just like a fun social thing to do. And, like, every time I decided to drink, there was some trouble I got into. There was some problem. There was some drama. And, like, to me, like, that just always was, like, I always attributed it to, like, just bad luck. Or, like, oh, my parents are, like, these sober, like, teetotaling, like, people who, like, won't let me do what I want to do, and, like, other parents are just, like, so much more reasonable with their children. Like, that's how I saw it. So, like many others, I mean, my experience with that, I mean, I wasn't a fan of the consequences, but the night had been the best night of my life. It was fantastic. I loved the feeling and the annihilation and the ability to just completely let go. So I continued to do that as often and as much as I wanted. It started out as, I guess, just, you know, from there, progressively, it went to, you know, trying to get in with the crowd of people that, you know, maybe your parents said, not, you shouldn't probably be hanging around with that person. And, you know, started just going to a party every other couple weekends, sneaking out of the house. Eventually, my parents moved my room upstairs because they're like, oh, you know, you're sort of just doing your own thing down there. And that was nice because I got moved upstairs and I had a window in my bedroom. And that's a great thing to have because you can just open it up and pop right out. So I remember Man, there was a couple times that were really bad. So once I had opened it up and gone out for the night and apparently made it back home, and I woke up in my room, but my window had a screen that you had to pop off. And I had forgotten to, I just fell into bed. So the screen's on the floor, the window's open, there's bugs all in the room. It's roughly this time in Wisconsin, it's 40 degrees out. My room's freezing. There's moss flying everywhere. My mom comes in to wake me up in the morning. You know, what in the world is going on here? Oh, that fell off in the middle of the night. I was too tired to put it back on. What? Like, that's like such a terrible excuse. Like, I thought I was like this fantastic liar. Like, I thought I had everyone convinced. I thought like my parents had no idea what was going on. Like, it's funny, like sort of the duality of it. Like, I'm always the person who gets in trouble, but yet I'm like this fantastic liar and like no one knows what's going on. Like, how does that work? Like, how does the math add up there? But it was just always like whatever situation was going on, whatever trouble I was in, like it was so easy just to point fingers and just say, like, this is completely on them. Like, I can't take any responsibility. So really, like, other than just like, I guess, your typical progression, like pretty quickly, like there isn't anything that's too wild or crazy about my story. And that used to bother me when I first came in here. So I came to the rooms and, you know, I get a month or 2 months, 3 months sober. I start hearing these people talk, and it's like, oh, I went, you know, I spent some time in prison. Oh, I just come back from relapse. I got my third DWI. You know, my wife left me, and our house is gone. And I started thinking, like, man, I don't think I belong here. Like, I don't think this is really. I don't think I've made it far deep enough yet to qualify for Alcoholics Anonymous. And I had, I don't remember if it was my sponsor at the time or just someone else. I was discussing about it in a meeting. But someone came up to me and was like, so you're worried that you don't belong in Alcoholics Anonymous because you haven't lost a house? And I said, yeah. And he said, have you ever bought a house? And I said, well, no. And he said, well, and you're worried because you've never gotten divorced? And I said, yeah. He said, well, have you ever been married? I'm like, no, I'm 16. So there was a lot of stuff that, like, the ways and behaviors and actions that I was taking, like, it wouldn't have worked for those things. You know, I would have lost those things. And if I had continued, like, I would have maybe not ever even acquired those things ever. And so, you know, being able to realize that, and then, you know, sort of being able to relate to, you know, you sort of hear, you know, one of the cliches of, you know, just sort of looking for the similarities, not the differences. And for me, like, what I found was that, like, so much of that lies, like, in the, like, the emotional and the spiritual stuff that at least I can get out of a talk. So, like, I can hear someone speak, or I can read a story in the back of the big book, and it has, it starts out and I just can't relate, you know? This person's a different gender, this person grew up in a different decade, this person just completely has a life that's, like, so far away from mine. How could we possibly be the same? And then they start to talk about the way they treated their family, and the emotional and spiritual havoc and damage that, like, they created, like, in their life and the lives of those around them. And I start to feel that inside of me, right? And I start to see those things. You know, so in early sobriety, I was really, really happy that I got sober in an area that was so just, like, strongly in, like, full circle and triangle of Alcoholics Anonymous. Like, it just was such a great area. So jumping back a little bit, sort of back a little bit, I guess, into my progression, like, I don't want to give you guys a whole bunch of just drunk log war stories, but for me, like, some of that important stuff, like I was just discussing, like, was some of that damage that I caused. And eventually, I get into some criminal behavior, and as a cop showed up to my school with a warrant for my arrest, but I've never been arrested because I was skipping school. So, you know, that happens, and I end up going to court, and you know, obviously my parents are just, you know, everything seems to be going downhill, and they totally know exactly what's going on. It's tough to understand, like, what it must have been like, especially now, like, sort of, like, having the perspective of, like, what it's life like living, you know, a spiritual program like this, like, dealing with a child. But I will say that it is super cool. I have a ton of love for like anybody out there who's, you know, either has family members sober in Alcoholics Anonymous or has family members that maybe should be sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. So eventually, basically my parents come to me with an ultimatum. My mom was always like, she was always the one that I could sort of just trick and continue to swindle and like sweet talk her. And, you know, she'd sort of be like, oh, okay, like you get another chance. And my dad was always like laying down the law, like ready to, you know, so they sort of balance each other out. Like if my dad had it his way, like he probably would have been a lot harsher on me a lot quicker. If my mom would have had it her way, like, I'm not sure. At the time, like, I hated my father. I really despised him for it. I thought, why can't I just live my life? Like, why can't you just let me, even if I realized they were mistakes, like, why can't you just let me do it? I'll learn my way. But now, looking back on it, like, if it would have just been one or the other, like, I might have never got here. I think that was totally in God's plan, just to have, like, that balancing act. So anyways, it comes down to an ultimatum, and it's basically, my dad said, if you're going to continue living in my house, like, you either need to go to treatment or you need to start, like, religiously going to AA meetings. And I have no idea, like, the reasoning behind what I was, like, what my choice was to be, but I was just like, that's fine, I'll go to AA. And I think the reason, I just didn't have, like, that clear of a mind, like, at the time. But looking back on it, like, I think I could just, like, BS my way through it. Like, how hard is it, you know, sit at a meeting? Like, I don't want to have to deal with, like, doctors and, like, all this stuff and, like, go to this place. And, like, I still had, like, my drinking buddies around. You know, I didn't have to be shipped off somewhere. So I come into Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm pretty sure that my first meeting was somewhere around the middle of October. And I got sober at the beginning of November. So I didn't have too much further to go, but I get sober, but I have absolutely no intention of staying. Like, I have no desire to. I had a little bit, like I said, like, idea. And before that, my dad had been, like, sort of forcing me to go to, like, open AA meetings. They wouldn't, like, leave me at home alone because they knew I'd just be, like, getting in trouble. So I had, like, a conception of, like, what an AA open meeting looked like and, like, a speaker, but, like, I never had, like, opened up the book. I never, like, had a serious discussion with a sponsor. Like, I never had done any of that. And so my parents were smart enough not to, like, drag me along to any more meetings that they go to, and they called someone and said, come pick him up, you know, take him off to a meeting on his own. And they took me off to the meeting that was mentioned earlier. It's the Well Group. It stands for We Enjoy Living Life Group, as a young person's group. So not that there aren't any sort of, it's not a special interest group, there's no age restrictions on it, but it does happen to attract quite a number of people somewhere between the ages of 15 and 30. But we have people as old as 75, 80. And so I get taken out there for my first meeting, and I go to the beginner's meeting. And the one thing that I did know, because I'd been around Alcoholics Anonymous basically for my entire life, was I did actually know how to sort of BS my way through it a little bit. I knew I was going to come home that night with a sponsor, right? Like, I knew that was one thing that, like, I could come home and say, Mom, I got a sponsor. You know, I'm doing the deal, right? Like I'm sober now. Like, I'm all about it. And then maybe she'd say, okay, cool. Here's the keys to the car back, right? And then I can go off and do my thing. So I get a sponsor, I go to the meeting, and I act like I'm interested, and I'm talking the talk, and I just have no intention of being there, and I continue to hang out with the same crowd of people I'm hanging out with. Obviously, at this time, like, I'm still in high school, so it was very easy for me. I don't want to say it was hard to get away from them, because once I finally did, it wasn't. But it was very easy for me to stay in those behaviors, right, and, like, stay with those same people. So the big thing everyone's talking about, I get in the, you know, into Alcoholics Anonymous the middle of October, and they're like, you got to come to the Halloween event. We're having a Halloween event. I'm like, what sort of event are you guys doing? Like, I didn't understand. I thought Alcoholics Anonymous was your sort of stereotypical, like, old men, maybe playing cards, church basements. Like, I thought that was, like, the rest of my life, right? Like, I thought that's where I was headed. You know, there are people at this meeting, like I said. Again, I'm still not super interested, but I do notice that it's not quite the typical crowd of what I expected. And I saw faces there that were roughly my age, and they're talking like they want to be there. And, like, I'm like, there's no way. Like, I think you're just doing the exact, I'm figuring your parents are forcing you to go here too, and you're just sort of trying to get your way through it. You guys aren't actually going to do something together, like, on a Saturday, are you? Like, really? Are you seriously going to, like, go down to this I don't know if you guys have Alano clubs here or Alano clubs, depending on what part of the country you're from, but we're going to go down to the Alano club, and there's going to be a DJ, and everyone's going to dance up. We're all going to dress up in Halloween costumes and have a dance and all this stuff. And people are like, yeah, absolutely. Like, you know, get your ticket. You got to come down. And so I start to get a really good, sick, alcoholic idea in my head, and I say, my parents would definitely give me the car if I said I was going to the AA dance, right? Like, I think of how impressed they would be if I was like, I'm going to the AA dance. You know, they're going to love it. They're going to eat that up, right? Especially my mom. Like, I can, you know, she's, you know, like I said before, like, I sort of just start pretending like I'm on fire for something, and she'll root for me all the way, right? Which is, like, such a terrible thing to take advantage of, right? Like, the strongest cheerleader in your life, like, someone who, like, really loves you and supports you, and you're like, man, I can definitely take advantage of that. and that was always me, just, like, always looking for the angle, right? So that's exactly what I did, you know? Oh, yeah, I'm going to go to the Halloween dance. I even told people at AA I was going to the Halloween dance because I knew my parents knew people in AA, and they talked to them and say, my son's going to the Halloween dance. They'll say, oh, yeah, he told me about it. He's going to be there. And so we had – my dad always bought Buick Roadmaster wood-paneled station wagons. And he truly, truly does just love them. But I think, like, an added benefit at that time in our life was, like, just call anyone in the city and someone knows where his kid is because you saw it flying down the road, right? Like, it's such a recognizable car. So I'm going to the Halloween dance, and I obviously don't know it at the time, but this ends up what is my last drink. So I never have any interest in going to the dance, and I'm not going to go there. So I go over to my buddy's house, and we start drinking and doing other substances. And that's just like I get there at like 9, and like the party doesn't start that we're going to until like midnight, right? So we're just pre-gaming and getting ready for the night. And then I get behind the wheel of the car, like I've done on multiple occasions before, intoxicated. And him and I start heading over to our buddy's house, who's hosting the big party. We're a quarter mile from his house. It's probably 20 minutes from where we were. And I missed my turn of where I'm supposed to go, and I flip a U-turn to turn around. Well, I didn't know this, but there was a cop behind me, and so he thought, you know, I'm trying to lose him. And so he pulls us over, and we're just like, oh man, this is it. You know, we're beginning our junior year of high school. We're both like relatively intoxicated. Oh, we're also under the age of 18, which I don't know about here, but in the state of Wisconsin, if you're under the age of 18, and I think at this point, I think maybe it was, if it's past like 1 o'clock or something like that, and you're under the age of 18 and you're caught and you're driving, like they're going to, if you get pulled over, like they'll call your parents. Like there's a curfew for under 18. So I'm like, oh man, they're definitely gonna call my parents, and they're probably going to tell my parents who I'm with. And that person is definitely not at the AA dance at the Alano Club. They know this person by name, and they're going to say, oh, he's with Alec. We know exactly what he's up to. So we get pulled over. The cop explains that you know, he caught me for speeding and that he thought I was trying to lose him. When I flipped the U-turn, I explained that I wasn't. And not once does he ask us whatsoever if we've had anything to drink that night. He doesn't ask me to step out of the car. He does call my parents. My parents do understand who I'm with. We never make it to the party. And he tells us to head home. And that's what we do. And I walk in, and my mom's standing at the end of the hallway, and she's bawling. And she's just crying her eyes out. And she says, like, just what are we going to do, right? What's the next step? We can't, there's no more punishment they can give me. They had taken the key away. They had grounded me for months at a time. They were drug testing me every 4 days, which cost a fortune, I would assume. And she was at her jumping off point with me. And she's, you know, just sitting there bawling. And at that time, the first thought that runs through my head is like, I got her. Hook, line, and sinker. If I can make her cry, I can manipulate her. Right? I can do whatever I want now. I can play my cards. Oh, how good it'll sound to her, like when I say, like, I'm ready to hop back on the horse. This is just a mistake. relapse is just the first step in recovery, right? Like, if I can just, like, get through all that and be like, I'm ready, now I'm ready just to pound the book and do the steps and get my sponsor and, like, do all that stuff, like, I can see she's hurting. I can see how good that'll sound to her and what I can do when I have that freedom back. And, man, like, that is just, like, in my life today, like, the most foreign way of thinking, and I'm so happy for that. Like, that is just, like, so... like, it makes me just feel weird thinking about, like, that was, like, at one point, like, what this disease did to me, right? Like, that's where it took me. So I say all that, and I do all that, and I do start going back to meetings, and I am just basically doing it to get the heat off, right? Trying to get them off my back. And I can't pinpoint it, and I don't need to, I suppose. But sometime in the next month and a half of going to AA meetings and meeting these people, some sort of switch flipped. And I became interested in Alcoholics Anonymous. And suddenly, I was going to my Tuesday night home group, my Thursday night meeting, and my Saturday meeting. I started being, like, looking forward to it, like, the day before. I started wanting to see the people that I saw there. And they started having more and more of these events on the weekends, and they did camping trips, and we did whitewater rafting, and we did conferences, and they started inviting me to these things. And I realized that they're not lying, too. Like, they're actually going to these things and doing the deal, right? And I go to a couple of them. And I remember going to my first dance. I don't think you can smoke in any places inside here anymore, but in Wisconsin... you can't anymore, but you used to. When I first got sober, you could smoke in churches, you could smoke in restaurants, and you could smoke all over the place. And so you could still smoke. So, like, you know, sometimes you hear, like, people tell, like, the, you know, back in the old days, you know, you could cut through the smoke in the room of an AA meeting. And I'm like, man, I experienced that before, like, they took it away. But I feel like, you know, I've been authenticated or something. But I remember going to that, and I remember the first time, and it was an AA dance. And I'm like, man, what's the deal with the dances? Like, why always the dance? Like, I can't dance. Like, I'm not interested in dancing. And I remember just having that, like, moment where I'm standing, you know, you're standing on the wall. I don't have any drugs or alcohol to fuel my, ability to be at all awkward in front of any other human being, right? Like, I can't stand, like, just, like, being inside my skin sober, and I haven't had any true recovery yet, but I'm at the dance, and I'm at the event, and I'm going to make it through. And it's just, you know, just getting completely uncomfortable. For, like, you know, one of the first true times, like, since I had basically started drinking. Because anytime anything that would come up that I wasn't interested in feeling or doing, like, just self-medicate and just put the, put the damper on it. So I start getting involved. And basically, I mean, it's just been, for the most part, like, fantastic since then. I got really involved with... some of the young people stuff in our area, got involved with. So the first thing I got involved with was it's called WIKIPAS, which is the Wisconsin Conference of Young People and Alcoholics Anonymous. So I got sober in, like, the beginning of November, and then that was the next January. By that time, I was, like, I wasn't, you know, well yet or anything, but, like, I was, plugged in enough that I knew the people and I wanted to go. And, like, that was probably, like, one of the first events that really sort of, like, started turning me on to the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And through that, the fellowship is what really brought me into the service structure of Alcoholics Anonymous, right? And I went to something like that, and I started to say, hey, like, you know, this would be really cool to be a part of it. And so I got involved in a bid committee, and we started bidding for this conference, and eventually we won the conference, and then we got to put on the conference, and all that was, like, a really, really awesome experience, and I've been doing that ever since. We just hosted Milwaukee, just had ECPA, which is the Eastern Area Convention of Young People and Alcoholics Anonymous, and that can be hosted by any state east of the Mississippi, so Pennsylvania is part of that, and I knew some people when I don't know if I said at the beginning that I just moved out here? Yeah. So, you know, when I moved out here, I knew some people because of that. And that's so cool, like, being able to travel in Alcoholics Anonymous and, like, just being able to reach out and say, I'm moving to Pennsylvania randomly. Work's taking me out there. I know 3 or 4 people out in Pennsylvania. They can hook me up, right? And if they don't know where I'm headed, they know someone who lives around there that can sort of get me all hooked up in AA. You know, and then I went to IKIPA, the international one, and that was in New York City the year I got, you know, the first one that happened after I got sober. And it's, you know, it's 5,000 or 6,000 people in downtown Manhattan, like partying like crazy and showing me that like life still has fun in it, like after sobriety, right? And there's still young people out there like doing fun stuff and like getting together. A little bit of a sort of touching on that base of like getting in touch with people out here. I had gotten in touch with a couple guys just over. I just posted in the actually in your Penske Pa Facebook group. It's like a private group or whatever, and just said, "Hey, I'm moving out here. You know, let me know if you know sort of what meetings you guys go to or whatever." And someone had reached out and said, "This meeting." So obviously, you know, if I was coming into town or if someone's coming to my town, and I said my meeting, I really hope someone would come. So I was like, "Yeah, I'll definitely come check it out." And so I had put it. This was last week. I put it in my GPS. I'm driving along. I get to the church, and there's no one. There doesn't seem to be anybody here. And I'm a little bit early, but usually, like at least where I'm from, you know, I try to get there 20, 30 minutes early, like to fellowship, say hi to people beforehand. So I got there around that time, and there's no one there. I'm like, oh, that's a little weird, but maybe it's, you know, I've been to a meeting before. You know, everyone just sort of shows up in the last 5 minutes, and we just get started. So I'm like, that's okay. Like, I don't really feel like just sitting in my car in the parking lot. I'll just sort of drive around and see what's in the area. So I start driving, and this is all just like the way I remember it, so it's probably not like this at all, and I can probably go back and look. But in my mind, like, I make a left, I make a right, maybe another right, another left. I'm just sort of aimlessly driving around the area, just sort of waiting to kill 10 minutes, and I'm gonna go back to the church because I don't want to be like awkwardly waiting in the parking lot, you know. And then you guys all show up, and it's like, who are you? Why are you waiting so early? What are you doing here? You know. So I still have like that little bit of like, I don't want to have that awkward encounter, right? But so I'm just driving around aimlessly, and I drive right down this road, right along there, and I see a bunch of people standing out here. And my GPS took me to the wrong church to begin with, and there's a bunch of people outside smoking. I said, that's it. That's an AA meeting. I can see them, and I knew it, right? Like, I saw you guys, and it's so funny, because, like, immediately it clicked in my brain what happened. I'm like, that was the wrong church. God just, like, because to me, like, who knows, I probably made one turn, and you guys were right here. But in my mind, like, I just sort of, like, wandered, like, with no real, like, thought or intention, and then suddenly here I was. So, like, sometimes it seems like that's sort of just a good metaphor for my life, right? Like, I seem to just sort of, I don't know, I come to a decision. I'm not sure which way's right. We'll go that way. It worked out, you know, and it's not always like that, but I just thought that was funny. It was really sort of like a, you know, God brought me to the meeting here last week, so I was really cool and grateful to sort of have discovered this group. So sort of, you know, outside of, you know, getting sober and getting involved with that young people stuff, I've only worked with two main sponsors. I worked with my first sponsor for probably the first, I don't know, 2.5 to 3 years, and then my current sponsor up until, and both have just been absolutely fantastic. Great guys to work with. Both my sponsors have like been sponsored, and I sponsor guys. Currently, I'm just sponsoring one guy back home, and I have my other sponsor too. I'm keeping the same sponsor and sponsees that I had when I left. I'm on a 1 year work rotation, so I'll be back in a year. So I'll be leaving the area, but I'm really sort of excited to, I don't know, be out here, check out the area. It seems like really strong area of like group of Alcoholics Anonymous. I got here. If you ever heard Clancy I talk, he talks about those pockets of enthusiasm, right? And that's where I come from. So whenever I travel, I sort of try to see if I can find one of those pockets of enthusiasm and see if I can find the people who are doing the deal. And, you know, I went to your guys' business meeting tonight talking about, you know, you have a GSR, you go to stuff. You're involved at, you know, sounds like area and district levels, and you do all these things. Like, for me, like, that's the part of Alcoholics Anonymous I'm interested in being in. You know, so it's all about sort of just finding that fellowship I crave, and seeking out the right people. There's a couple of sort of key things that, you know, in my sobriety that have really been, I don't know, just huge things for me. So I guess trying to work in chronological order, we'll try not to jump around too much. So I spent 2 years, basically almost 2 full years in high school sober. And that was a really interesting experience. And it's been really cool. The group that I've been a part of, my home group, like I said, like gets a lot of kids who are coming in there, 15, 16, 17 years old. And it's really great that we have like myself and like a couple solid others. It seems like almost like for me, AA comes in like waves of like these classes of people that really stick around. And like, I feel like I came in with like this class of like roughly like some people who are like 6 months more sober than me and 6 months less sober than me. And like that year span, like we've all been sober, like, you know, 7 to 9 years. And that's really cool. It's really great that like I've been able to like cultivate like those friendships, and maybe that's just sort of everyone's experience as they come through, but maybe not, I don't know. But I've been able to work with a lot of different guys that have come in there, and you know, it's like, that's a tough time to try to turn your life around. I mean, not that there's ever like a super easy time, and not that anyone ever really comes to Alcoholics Anonymous that I've seen too often where they're just like immediately ready to go, like gung ho, right? But it has been neat sort of being able to make an impact. I was my senior year in high school. He was a substitute teacher at our school, and I never knew he was in Alcoholics Anonymous until I started coming to meetings and I saw him there. The first time it happened, the phone rings in the classroom or whatever, and the teacher answers and they say, you know, Taylor, you got to go down to the principal's office. And my head's spinning, like, I don't know what I did. What did I do this time? Like, why am I getting called down there? I don't think I've done anything wrong. And sitting in there is this substitute teacher who I know is in AA, and a kid he said is struggling. He wants me to sit and chat with him. I'm getting pulled from class to do 12-step work. I was just like, I don't know where that guy is today, but like that was cool. And I had that opportunity to do that a couple times. And that was just like, I don't know, such a different experience. Anyway, so then I graduated high school and I went on to college, and I went to University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. And I wanted to do, at this time, like I'm going to college. I got 2 years under my belt. Like I feel like I'm on solid footing. And so I choose like not to stay at home or anything. And I choose to live like in the college dormitories. And that was an experience to say the least. There was times where it wasn't the funnest. And there was other times where it was great. I got to live with one of my still current like best friends, who at that time actively participated in drugs and alcohol. And, and sort of living in that culture, was really different, interesting, but I had my people surrounding me. I had people coming and picking me up and taking me to meetings multiple nights out of the week. There was meetings in walking distance from the campus. I had close supportive friends. I wasn't that far from home. And I'm really happy I did that, because I think it was just like one of those experiences. And it wasn't, you know, the book talks about it, right? Like we don't need to shy away from stuff, you know, if we have a good reason for being there. You know, and I wanted to experience living on my own for the first time, getting away from mom and dad, like doing college, like doing the whole thing. And I didn't think that I needed to be restrained by, you know, the fact that I was now a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I didn't need to shy away from that. And so that was a really cool experience. And then a year after that or so, myself and another really good friend of mine who was sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, we planned a 3-month trip across Europe. And in between college years and the summer, we spent 3 years backpacking across Europe. We did basically everything from London, as far west as London, as far east as Budapest. Then we went as far north as Copenhagen, where we visited the EURIPA, which is the European Conference of Young People in Alcoholics Anonymous. And then as far south as we went all the way down into North Africa, into the Sahara Desert, and spent a night there. So it was really fast-paced, like crazy big trip. We did in 3 months, we did 50 cities. So we were flying. But that was fantastic. And like it was really, I'm really, really happy that I did that with another member of AA, because that was like a big focus of the trip, was like experience meetings in other cultures. This isn't my original language, but I think that I experienced it, and I find it to be extremely true. And that's that if you're ever curious, when they talk about the language of the heart, what that means, check out a meeting in a different language and just sit and listen. And you'll hear the story. You know, you don't need all the words, and you can hear it. And I would still, you know, we'd go to meetings speaking German, speaking Spanish, and I spoke a little bit of Spanish, and that was about it, speaking French. And we'd still get what we needed out of it. And it was cool too, because there, you know, people would speak English after the meeting. You'd still sort of get to converse and chat and stuff. And there is a ton of just English speaking meetings all over the world anyway, so you can still find them. And it was neat as well that, you know, traveling with another alcoholic, you know, we'd be camping for a week or something, and oh, you need a meeting? Let's have, you know, two alcoholics gathered together. Let's go, right? So that was really neat too, and just sort of being away. We had no phone, just really sort of disconnecting from the world. That was awesome, and just a really cool trip. Shortly after this, I started dating my now wife. So we had actually met in high school, and she's a normie, as you say, and she'd known, you know, so we actually met freshman year of high school and had been friends basically throughout that whole time. We started dating a little bit into our college time, and that's been really interesting. I mean, that's been, you know, that was something that I always struggled with, I think, as a lot of us do when we're living in active alcoholism. Like, maintaining relationships is, we do a pretty piss poor job of it. And that was really the first, I guess, and still is, hopefully, successful sort of, you know, romantic relationship I was able to maintain. And she's just like something else. Not just, you know, her as my wife, but also, you know, she'll open up a bottle of wine, just have half glass. Dumps it out a week later. I'm like, what are you doing? Like, what is this? Like, how do you live this way? It's just like, it's sort of, again, like another little cliche, but I always thought this one was funny. It was like, you want to see alcohol abuse? That's alcohol abuse, right? But it's really cool, I guess, just sort of seeing the differences and the stuff that I have to work really hard to sometimes act like and be like, and to her it comes very, very naturally. But people aren't without flaws, you know, and in relationships, just both, you know, two parties working at it, and that's what's, you know, been taught so well to me, particularly by my sponsor. I have a sponsor who, he wasn't my sponsor, like I said, for the first couple of years, but he is now, and I basically grew up, once I got to AA, like, at their house. They were that AA couple in town who just always had the open door policy, and you could come over almost unannounced at almost any time, and have someone to talk to, and like in a true open door policy, like you show up and like the door is open, like there's people there, whether they're there or not, like there's people hanging out at this house, and they were the type of people that would they would have a fight in front of you. And they would show affection in front of you. And they were the type of people that taught me how to have a relationship like that. And they taught me about what it was like. I saw it in my parents, and I learned in my family and taught it in school. But they were the people that I truly like led by example for me, and truly sort of set the stage and set the standard for sort of who I was to be as a man. So that's been fantastic, being with her. We got married just over a year ago. What brings me out here, as I said before, is work. So that's definitely a totally different experience. She's back home. We own a home in Wisconsin. So she's back home. So this is the first time we're sort of doing this whole gig and living apart. It's funny too. I was out here last week, like I said, was the first week I moved out here, and I was out here with some work friends, and they had traveled with me from our corporate offices as well. They're like, oh, you know, you're gonna have to, you know, really sort of maybe get involved with some sort of social clubs or something, and sort of make some friends out here. You know, I don't know what you're gonna do. I'll have to check that out, right? And you know, I've been here for like two or three nights, and I've already been texting and in contact with three or four different guys. And so that's just like such a pleasure. For me, I don't have a ton of time here left, but I'll sort of try to get a little bit into sort of, I guess, what my program looks like today and what I do to keep it moving. Like I said, for me today, like the biggest thing is still sponsorship. It's still the basics, really. It's continuing to stay in contact with my sponsor. You know, we probably try to chat at least 2 to 3 times a week on the phone, and we're texting intermittently between. And then really like the greatest pleasure that's been given me, like, is working with other guys. Like that's for me like what it's all about. I was really inspired. I have a really good friend of mine. He got in a motorcycle accident 2 years ago now, and he was uh, he he was put in a coma. Like, he was, everyone really thought he was going to die. He was going on a motorcycle, and a box truck pulled out right in front of him, and he just hit the side of it just completely. And he was in a coma for like a month or something. And, I don't know, 25, 30 broken bones, brain damage, had to relearn how to talk, had to relearn how to walk, had to relearn how to eat. Our area prayed like hard, really hard. And that was like probably like one of the first times that I really like I prayed and talked to my God and had a higher power and have felt like that God consciousness, and I had done all that, working through the steps, I put in the work and I had that. But I just, I always heard if enough people just prayed, maybe something would happen. And I don't know, I'm not any sort of authority on it whatsoever, but I'm telling you, in this instance at least, our area prayed, and this kid was not supposed to live, and he lived. And he's one of my best friends today. And he has been, he's not my sponsor, we're peers, and we're not, whatever, but he has been a fantastic example for me of what it's like to really appreciate life. Because now he's great, he's doing fine, but man, if he doesn't live every day to the fullest. And he works with other guys vigorously, so much better than I do. And he's just a fantastic example. And for me, it's about having those people that I'm not because although he does all that, he's by no means on a pedestal to me, right? And I can fall into that trap, even with my sponsor, with other people in my area. I can see them and be man, if I could just be like them. But there's something else. That life's unattainable for me. I don't have the time. I can't do that sort of stuff. This guy is my age, does the same stuff, has the same responsibilities, and he's working with every single time I see him. I met with a new guy. I'm 12 step a new guy. Working with this new guy every single time, right? And I'm man, I need to step that up. And just continually be working with new people. And that's where I found the best joy. And then another thing too, I sort of mentioned a little bit about, sort of having, loving and sympathy for families in Alcoholics Anonymous. That has been another one of the biggest gifts of this program. I talked a little bit about the relationship with my dad, when I got here. And it was bad. We were having fist fights bad. And I call him almost every day. And I call my mom almost every day, and I call my grandma every couple times a week. And that's the sort of stuff that, I never thought, it never seemed that important to me growing up. Of course, it's, I don't know why it wouldn't have seemed important, but it just was it was a given, right? That's a relationship you don't have to work at. There's just unconditional love there. I don't have to do anything. I'm a taker, right? If you're going to give it, that's fine, but I don't need to put the work in. And I've realized that's obviously not the case, and I've been able to put the work in, and I've been able to make those amends. And my parents are two of my closest friends today. I bounce stuff off them like I would off a sponsor, and they're up to date and they're current in my life today. And then I guess just service. Comes, besides, the fellowship, working the steps, working with the other dudes, and keeping it simple and moving on to service. Like I said, I continue to stay involved. I stay involved with some of that YPAW stuff. I get involved at the group level. Hopefully, obviously picking up some commitments while I'm out here. So don't be afraid, come up and ask me. I just rotated off at my home group, the commitment of, it was called commitment coordinator. So my job was to go up and ask people if they'd want to do stuff. And I was like, this will be a breeze. This is going to be easy. That commitment was awful. It was fine. It worked out just fine. I learned a lot from it. But man, I was surprised. I was getting people saying no. And that's just I guess, whatever, that's fine. But for me today, if I can, I don't even have to, if I'm, they say willing and able, if I'm able, right? I'll become willing. And if I don't, that's fine too. I remember I had a commitment at that Badger group I was talking about. It's 350 people. I'm a terrible singer. I hate singing. I can't sing in front of people. And they made me the birthday maestro. Every week, 350 people sing happy birthday from a microphone. Awful, right? Absolutely terrible. Every single week, I have the shakes sitting in my chair, right? I'm like, oh my God, like, I have a job, like, I'm a man, like, I graduated college, like, I can't do this, right? That's the thing I can't do. You know, but I did it, and that's just, like, it's, like, the same thing from, like, when I first got sober and I'm at the dance, and I can't, like, walk onto the dance floor, right? Like, it's just, like, getting uncomfortable, like, forcing myself, like, to constantly be outside of myself. One of my favorite, like, things that I ever hear about Alcoholics Anonymous, and I don't, who knows who said it first, but I heard it from someone else, and you've probably heard it before, too, but it's this idea that Alcoholics Anonymous does for me very slowly what alcohol did for me very quickly. And I just, like, have, that's just, like, so profoundly, like, it rang, like, so true to me. Because I get exactly what I need here. It's just not always quite, you know, it's just not quite the same way that alcohol did it to me. But at the end of the day, I end up with that same calm, that same ability to talk to others, that same confidence, the ability to carry myself, except for the difference is here I'm carrying myself in a truly respectful manner, whereas if I'm drunk, I feel like I am. You know, so to me, I guess, you know, maybe this talk's been a little roundabout, and I tried to give you a little bit of history and also sort of what I'm doing today, but I try to stick to the basics. I keep a God in my life. I try not to make it too complicated. I pray in the morning. I pray at night. Keep in touch with others in AA. Try to help the new guy. That's it. That's all I got.